He managed to shake off his shock and grabbed a branch so he wouldn't fall back down. Only afterward did he realize how high up he was, and after that, he realized that his shirt had been torn. There were scrapes underneath, but they were barely bleeding. Not sure how to proceed, Rick just stayed on the branch and looked down. Delson walked up to the bear again, patting it roughly on the chest. Blue put its paws on his head again and gnawed playfully on his shoulder for a while, then eventually trundled off into the woods. Rick just stayed on the branch and tracked the bear for as long as he could.
"You okay up there?"
Delson turned and called to him. After checking the injury, Rick nodded.
"I'm okay. Can I come down now?"
"Yeah, it should be safe now."
Taking a deep breath, Rick pushed himself a bit off the tree and dropped to the ground. The impact jarred his legs a bit, but less than the bear's first blow had. Delson had already approached with unnatural speed and looked him over.
"Huh, you held up under that surprisingly well. And here I thought my carelessness had gotten some poor kid maimed."
"What?"
Rick had to take a deep breath to calm himself and keep speaking.
"What made it attack me all of a sudden?"
"Oh, that wasn't an attack. When they attack, they pin their prey down and bite. I think Blue likes you. But yeah, that's why you don't just adopt an Aura Bear as a pet. Or at least you shouldn't. There are always a few idiots with more money than sense."
"Well, I guess no real harm done beyond my shirt."
Rick touched one of the painful lines of red and winced. Yet he found himself staring after the bear, curious about the way it had used Aura.
"I don't like that look."
Despite his words, Delson glanced at him with a smile.
"What are you thinking?"
"Nothing. Let's just go find the anomaly, hopefully without running into any more apex predators."
He set himself to working again and repeated the technique, advancing toward the anomaly. Unfortunately, Delson wasn't put off, following him with an amused expression.
"If I didn't know better, I'd say that you were thinking about going after old Blue again."
"Well,"
Rick decided that there was no point being dishonest with the old man. "I was just thinking that a bit of playing with an animal like that would be potentially good training."
"Huh, you're crazy. Not for fighting a bear. That actually would be good training. But in your rush for new Lucrum experiences. Ah, youth."
Abruptly, Delson turned serious.
"If you do come back and fight the animals in our refuge, I will shoot you. This isn't a petting zoo."
"All right, message received. This would be a terrible petting zoo anyway." Delson chuckled and just followed him as they hiked onward. Though Rick was thrown off by the encounter with the bear, he kept himself focused and homed in on the anomaly. They didn't talk much, and there were no more distractions, so eventually he located a point where the aura between his hands went wild. It didn't seem like much, just a small clearing with a few rotting logs. Rick stood up and glanced at Delson.
"All right, this is it. What happens now?"
"Stay here a spell while I report the exact location to the people who can do something about it. Don't punch any bears while I'm gone."
With that, Delson stepped back into the woods and just melted away. Rick knew that it must be a Lucrum technique, but he had no idea how it had been done or even exactly what it had done. Left alone, he wandered around the clearing without disturbing anything. He peered at some mushrooms atop the log, wondering if they were some sort of special Lucrum-using mushroom, but he didn't think so. This might simply be a normal anomaly without anything unusual going on around it. For just a moment, he did consider getting out the wooden sphere and contacting the CSLA about the location. What guarantee did he have that Delson would actually keep to his agreement, after all? Or maybe he could find some way to get credit for reporting the anomaly while still letting Delson dissolve it the way he wanted. But no, he'd made a promise. Rick found himself considering whether or not the wooden sphere might be tracking local information even without his input. Its inner workings were dense enough that he couldn't be sure what all it did. Recording people without their knowledge might be illegal, but he doubted that the CSLA really cared.
"Okay, it's done."
Delson melted out of the forest without warning.
"And you didn't break our agreement to go tell your bosses?"
"I promised that I wouldn't."
"Oaths don't mean very much these days."
Delson came up beside him and put a heavy hand on his shoulder, a bit of sentiment in his eyes.
I'm glad I was right to trust you, Rick. In an age of greed, where everyone is too wrapped up in themselves to care, you've given this old man a reason to hope again.
Rick stared at him for a long moment. Bullshit. Delson barked out a laugh and turned away for him to follow.
Okay, looks like I played the angle too hard with you. But let's go. You made good on your promise, so I want to fulfill my end. I know one anomaly that should be easy for you.
Where is it? Rick moved after him as they hiked back into the woods. It's actually getting later, so just telling me the location might be better.
Oh, don't worry about that. Just keep your Lucrema soul limp.
A moment later, the world blurred around them. Though Rick could have tried to resist, he trusted Delson enough that he just braced himself internally instead of fighting it. His senses rebelled against what he was seeing, but he thought that space was being folded around them somehow. Then, suddenly, they were standing at the edge of a forest. The world spun for a moment, and Rick tasted acid in the back of his throat, but otherwise there was no harm done. He swallowed to clear his mouth and looked around. Though he wanted to try the surveying technique to see if they were close to an anomaly, he looked to Delson first.
That was the sacred forest step technique, the old man said. For those of the ancient blood, it allows us to pass instantly through friendly forests.
Yeah, I can do the same thing in trailer parks. Delson barked another laugh and gestured to one side.
That's east, and it will take you to the highway. But there's a point just north of here that I'm pretty sure is your Lucrem anomaly, though I wasn't able to pinpoint it exactly.
You already know it. Rick bent down and began setting up the technique again, but he glanced curiously at Delson as he did so.
Yeah, one of my nephews noticed that we had invasive species entering this side of the refuge with more Lucrem than we'd expect. I figured that it was probably what you call an anomaly, but all we could do was take measures to prevent any problems. Getting rid of it will actually be doing us another favor.
Well, I've got it. Rick stood up and quickly located the correct point, which was actually within sight. He started to reach for the sphere in his pocket, then stopped and glanced at his guide. Thanks for this, Delson. I'm going to report it soon, but I wasn't sure if you wanted to leave first. I'm not sure what kinds of readings they'll take.
Probably a good precaution.
Delson folded his arms and smiled at Rick.
You're all right, kid. Can we count on you to help out again?
Yeah, I'd do this deal again if you want. Maybe next time I can show up at the actual office and you can find a path with fewer aura bears?
Maybe. But full disclosure, this is the only easy anomaly that I know about. I do have another one I know about, maybe two, but I only noticed because I got called in for a problem. They won't all be this easy.
Though Rick considered that for a moment, he decided that it didn't matter. The biggest problem had always been finding the Lucrem anomalies across so much area, so any method of locating them was invaluable. Plus, he thought it might be good to establish a working relationship with Delson.
Thanks for telling me, but I'm willing to take my chances. I'm a wild youth, after all. Good. Next time, call the office, and they'll get things sorted.
With that, Delson melted away with his technique again, and Rick was alone in the countryside. After taking a moment to double-check that the anomaly was stable, Rick called in the report. He got an immediate confirmation check via text on his phone. If it was anything like the first one, they'd take a bit to calculate the value of the anomaly, then add it to the scoreboard. Despite the setbacks getting to this point, he was ahead of the quotas. Since he wasn't needed for anything else at the location, Rick began to walk east to find the highway. If they'd been transported north, then he would have quite a long bike ride back. That would be a good chance to try to train to exhaustion again, but he wouldn't mind the extra time. He needed to figure out the best way to tell Melissa that he'd been attacked by a bear, because there was no way she'd believe it. Rick chuckled and began to jog back. Chapter 21. Jackalopes. Though the injury on Rick's chest took little time to heal, he decided to take a day off to deal with other issues so he could recover fully. Those issues weren't trivial either. He had a paycheck coming in, and apparently the CSLA didn't want to give him a check like usual, they wanted to make a bank transfer. That meant actually getting a proper bank account. In the end,
he went to the bank that had never called him back about the job offer. Though Rick felt like that would be awkward or uncomfortable, in fact, the bank was a huge organization that didn't even remember him. He just had to fill out some forms, then he got the information he needed to give at work. Now he could safely store his 7,000 extra lucrum. Back outside Branton, he tried to follow up on some other leads, but wasn't able to track down any anomalies. Deciding that the Peakless Wildlife Refuge was his best option for now, he called and spoke to a young woman. She seemed to be in a hurry, but scheduled a time for him to come and meet with Delson in a couple days. Until then, he focused on training and went apartment hunting with Melissa. Honestly, it was more about spending time with her than getting useful information about apartments, since he still needed another 93,000 lucrum for a fighter deposit. An experience that could have been miserable was rendered amusing, as Melissa urged them to visit apartments far outside of their price range and endlessly talked about the tasteless statues that she'd install in the rooms. He did find himself thinking about the apartment problem often, though. Encountering an actual aura bear and coming away without serious injury had made him wonder if he even needed to move. If Melissa did well on her CLAT and moved out, he didn't like to think about it, what did it matter if his apartment was a bit unsafe? The meth heads were little threat to him, and if he kept training, he'd eventually become invulnerable to lucrum bullets as well. For some reason, it took them a couple days, but once they finally credited his new anomaly to him, he was glad to look at the scoreboard. 1. Panjo, 131 merits. 2. Elliot Rutherford III, 127 merits. 3. Redacted, 126 merits. 4. Kate Durham, 122 merits. 5. Oswald, 104 merits. 5. Damien, 103 merits. 5. Matchk Baron, 101 merits. 8. Heidi Cunningham, 87 merits. 8. Skin Master Zero, 81 merits. 10. Jack Ganas, 77 merits. 13. Javiera Banks, 71 merits. 14. Rick Hunter, 68 merits. 15. Andre Dyer, 64 merits. The top ranks had shuffled around a bit and pulled away from the rest, but otherwise, not much had changed and they didn't mean much to him. He was curious about the redacted contestant, but had no idea what it meant. It looked like Damien and Jack had both increased their rank. So had he, not that winning was really his priority. Once it was time for his appointment, Rick biked out to the Peakless Wildlife Refuge again, trying to endure one gear higher this time. He had hoped to meet members of Delson's family, both out of curiosity and to see if they had anything useful to say about assisting animals in his job, but that was not to be. The main refuge office, not hard to find once he understood how the roads connected, was a nice building, a mix of older and modern styles that seemed bright and clean compared to Delson's isolated shack. It looked like there were some large wooden signs that had plaques with local information on them, the kind of thing he would have expected at a less dangerous park. None of that mattered, because Delson stood in front of the building, waiting for him. He just gave a nod. Then, as soon as Rick got close, he transported them deep into the refuge. Rick still couldn't figure out how the technique was done, not even the basics, so he decided that was one he'd need to give up on for now. They jumped around the park several times so he could take readings, and Rick was amazed how much more efficient it was. Still, at some point, once they had a hint of the lucrum anomaly, there was no choice but to begin walking and feeling it out. This time, there were no animal attacks, so it went relatively smoothly. But at the end of the day, they still hadn't found the anomaly. Rick actually suspected that there were two more in the refuge, perhaps close enough together to screw up their readings. Delson stepped in and out, apparently going about other work. Occasionally, he provided sardonic conversation, but often he was absent or silent. When he appeared the next time, Rick just shook his head slowly. "We've spent the entire day on this. I think we'll need to pick things up tomorrow." "Seems fair." Delson transported them to the edge of the highway in another blurring technique. At least by now, Rick didn't feel like vomiting, though it wasn't exactly pleasant.
"Same time tomorrow."
"Yeah, we can do that. But wait, don't go." Rick caught him just before he disappeared again. Even if we're having trouble in the refuge, being able to jump around to test different points is incredibly effective. Is there anything at all I could do to convince you to help me find other anomalies?
You mean taxi you around the wilderness?
Right. Just for a short time each day, so I can survey a larger area and then get to the harder work of tracking down the actual anomaly. I doubt that money motivates you, but I'd be happy to give you a fair amount of what I'd earn doing that. And maybe if I do well enough, I could convince the CSLA to adopt better policies for the Peakless Wildlife Refuge.
I'd figure that you were trying to manipulate me, but you actually mean it. That's a fair offer.
Delson turned toward him with a somber expression, then put a hand on his shoulder.
You're a better man than I first thought, kid. Instead of going back and forth with this anomaly bullshit, what would you say to a longer-term agreement?
He thought it was a long shot, so this was a pleasant surprise. What kind of agreement?
Don't get all soft on me, but something like a mentorship. I'd expect you to help with the anomalies in the refuge, plus take on some new duties. But in return, I'd help you out with your little job and maybe train you in a few useful skills.
I'd love... Rick hesitated, searching the old man's eyes. He saw only sincerity there, yet...
That's not a serious offer, is it? Hell no. I have like 3 nieces and nephews trying to get me to train them, so the last thing I want is another damn mentee.
Delson took a step closer and poked him in the chest, smirking.
I do think you're an all right kid, but that means nothing. You help me resolve problems I can't solve myself, and I'll compensate you so that we're even. But that agreement is all this will ever be.
All right, you've made your point. Rick turned away and manifested his bike, then swung one leg over it. I'll get out of your hair.
Ah, hell. Wait.
Delson turned after him with an odd expression.
I've been checking on other anomalies to pay you, and it's not as easy as I thought. One of them is downright dangerous, and the other one will be really fucking vague. Given the work you're doing for us, I'm not sure this deal is equitable.
Meaning?
At the end of the deal, the scales won't be quite balanced. So I'll owe you a favor, and I don't like that. So you think about how to get it paid quick. You want me to teleport you around to find an anomaly? Fine, I'll do it once. Just think about it so that I can wrap this up instead of having you hold it over my head, all right?
Seems fair. Rick gave the man a nod and then biked away. He was quite a ways down the road before he looked back, and by that point, Delson was gone. In the end, it took them an entire additional day to finally isolate the Lucrum anomaly. Once he had it pinpointed, Rick was certain that there was a third somewhere in the refuge, one that would hopefully be easier to find now that it was alone. But his head was aching from doing the surveying technique over and over, so he wasn't about to get started on that. Instead, he just turned and looked at Delson expectantly.
All right, I'll show you your payment before we turn in for the day. You want the dangerous one or the ambiguous one?
Dangerous, Rick answered immediately. I have no idea how long it will take me to find the ambiguous one, and like you said, better to get this taken care of.
Works for me.
Delson snapped his fingers, and suddenly they were standing on an empty plain. Rick felt sicker than usual and wondered if they'd gone further, but that didn't matter compared to absorbing his surroundings. The grass looked darker than usual, but otherwise it was a normal spot of wilderness. It seemed like they weren't too far from the highway. Nothing stuck out to him except a region of taller grass that led to a hilly area. When he tested the surveying technique, it confirmed what he suspected. The Lucrum anomaly was somewhere in that direction.
I'm sure as shit not going to help you with this place, Delson said, beginning to walk forward. But I'll at least show you the danger. Come this way, and you'll see if you think you can take it.
Rick nodded and followed, approaching the tall grass. He didn't sense anything particularly dangerous, but supposed that it might be hidden within. When Delson stopped, Rick slowed down too, instead trying to survey the area again. Too late, he saw something rush out of the grass, small and furry. Yet it launched itself directly at him with considerable speed, forcing him to break the technique and raise his arm in defense. A line of pain seared across his arm. It tore not only his jacket, but his skin as well. Rick punched backward on instinct and felt his fist impact on something soft.
When it crashed to the ground, he couldn't help but stare at it. The creature looked like a rabbit with horns on its head. Very long, very sharp horns. He subconsciously touched his arm, surprised that it had been able to pierce his defenses even slightly.
A jackalope?
Rick shook his head. Honestly, I thought they were a hoax or something.
They are a living, breathing hoax.
Delson abruptly looked up toward the grass.
But here's the dangerous part.
Rick looked up too and saw it. Dozens of areas of grass rustling. Several jackalopes emerged from the grass, sprinting for them, and there were a lot more coming. He raised his fists, not sure how he was going to fight off that many small threats. Not only was it a completely different style of fighting than he'd ever done before, each one of them was actually a risk. Before they could arrive, the world blurred. Rick staggered, getting his aura back in order, and saw that they had been transported to what looked like a different side of the dangerous region. They were further back this time, hopefully at a safe distance.
That's what I meant, Delson said. Unless you have strong defenses or killer instincts, those things will tear you apart.
Yeah, I can see that.
Rick took a few moments to catch his breath.
But you said they were a hoax.
Instead of answering directly, Delson blurred away. He returned several seconds later with a jackalope in his hands. It made a hissing noise and continually tried to twist to stab him with its horns, but couldn't overcome his strength. Up close, Rick saw that it also had nasty-looking teeth. The old man smiled gently and stroked its fur.
You see this wonderful creature, an innocent animal, an integral part of creation.
Yes?
Wrong.
Delson dropped the jackalope and punted it over the horizon.
Those things aren't natural, they're weapons. A long time ago, somebody thought they could take advantage of the legends and twisted normal rabbits into those creatures. The details are sketchy, some kind of lucrum-enhanced manipulation of the Shope papillomavirus. I never paid much attention to that part.
Rick wished he could examine the creature more carefully, but settled for watching from a distance.
Why would someone create them as weapons, though?
I don't know what they originally wanted. Probably something idiotic. But if you give nature the ability to manipulate lucrum, it's going to use it ruthlessly. The jackalopes became a nasty invasive species. A long time ago, they actually had to get warriors to exterminate them. Now, they're only a problem when they get some source of lucrum to expand their population. Usually it's human garbage, but apparently these anomalies work too.
So it's a safe bet that you're not going to ask me to spare their lives so they can live free in the forests.
Glad you're getting the picture. No, sometimes respecting nature means stomping a bunch of little furry bastards. The refuge might even compensate you for the ones you eliminate, but I really don't recommend just wandering in there unprepared.
Yeah, I can see that.
Rick stared out at the grass for a while, rubbing the cut on his arm, then shook his head.
I don't know how I'll do it, but you fulfilled your part of the deal. I'll get back to you once I've figured things out.
Delson nodded and then blurred away, leaving Rick to find the path back to the highway. Along the way, he decided that this was a challenge that he couldn't take on himself. The chance of getting ambushed or struck from his blind spots was simply too high. As he biked back, he considered his options. Melissa was out. Given her limited defenses, she could take a serious injury. Lisa had a stronger Lucrema portfolio, but he didn't think she'd like this kind of life-risking behavior. He seriously considered Tom for a while, since the other fighter had no doubt become even stronger, but decided that it would be crass to contact him out of nowhere to ask for something. If he had a good option, it was probably Emily, if he could get her interested. Those thoughts slid away as Rick got back to the apartment complex. As he walked to the staircase, he had to step over a puddle of vomit. On the way up, he noticed that there was a new hole that might be from a gunshot. As if to hammer the point home, that night he struggled to get sleep over a screaming match in the apartment beside theirs. There was no question he had to leave this apartment. The only question was when and how. Chapter 22. Jackalope Season. The next morning when Melissa woke up and he explained, she gave him a long, long look. Eventually, she giggled.
Your life is getting so weird, bro. I honestly can't tell if you're messing with me or not.
I'm serious. Jackalopes.
Oh, no. Rather, will you be able to endure the terrible trial of the Whittle Fluffy Wuffykins?
With annoyance that was only partially feigned, Rick picked up his jacket and showed her the rip. They're seriously weapons. This jacket has been through so much, but now those little monsters wrecked the sleeve. Melissa clapped her hands to her cheeks.
Zounds, what ferocity.
Your tone is really shifting all over the place here.
Take heart, O brave slayer of tiny furry animals. Fear not.
Melissa abruptly shifted to just smiling at him.
But seriously, bro, be careful. If it's not too much trouble, can you bring me back one? I'm honestly curious to see what one of them looks like.
I mean, it's going to look like an evil rabbit with horns. What are you going to do, stuff and mount it?
Of course. Then I can stroke it obsessively while rambling about the voices.
Melissa finished her cereal, then looked at her phone and winced.
Oh, dang. I'm actually going to be late for my shift if I don't hurry. Like, right now.
Yes, let nothing keep you from your invaluable work of making fists more cosmic.
Ha ha. Sorry for leaving my dishes out, but I've really got to run.
Melissa grabbed her jacket on the way out, shot him another smile, and slammed the door as she left. Alone again, Rick got up slowly and stretched. He picked up her bowl and spoon without thinking about it and rinsed them off before setting them beside the sink. Ideally, he wanted to take on the problem as soon as possible, but it was early and he didn't know if Emily had work. A moment later, he realized that of course he knew. Emily probably kept normal working hours, and it was Saturday. It was still a bit early, so it would be rude to call. Instead, he went through his usual exercises and meditation. His arm no longer stung, but he examined it carefully to try to determine if it needed any care. Most likely, even if Emily was willing to help him, he wasn't going to get out of this without some injuries. Usually, Rick's health was great, but he found himself wondering if he should get some antibiotics to be safe. His cores gave him some resistance to infection, though lucrum-using animals might prevent that. Or would they? He ended up distracting himself trying to find an answer online. Eventually, he decided that it was late enough to call Emily. The phone rang longer than usual, and he began to regret bothering her. He'd have hung up if she didn't already know he'd called, which would just make it awkward. Just when he was about to anyway, she picked up.
Yeah?
She sounded a bit sleepy, and he winced. Sorry, is this too early?
I'm fine. What's up?
Rick took a deep breath. Okay, so I'm facing a bit of a challenge, and I don't know if it'd be interesting to you or not. Basically, there's an infestation of lucrum-using animals. He explained the situation with the Peakless Wildlife Refuge briefly, not wanting to waste her time, and then the potential challenge. To his surprise, she cut him off.
Sure, I'm in. I assume you're wanting to do this soon? Would this afternoon be fine?
Pulling away from the phone, Rick stared at it for a bit. He had expected this to be way more of a challenge, but he wasn't going to complain. Yeah, that would be fine.
Cool. I'll pick you up at 1.
With that, Emily hung up, leaving him a bit puzzled. Having her along would definitely make the whole thing less of a foolish risk. He just hadn't expected it to be so easy. For a while, he just stood there. Then he set about getting ready. If taking some injuries was a certainty, then he needed to wear something durable but expendable. He considered Granny Whitney's combat suit, but it was his only good combat clothing, and he didn't want to get it torn apart. In the end, he settled for some old jeans and a couple layers of old shirts. Not exactly fashionable, but hopefully the right choice for the job. After throwing a few more useful things into his backpack, he was mostly ready. He found himself way more nervous than he should have been, pacing around the small apartment. Going into dangerous situations wasn't new for him, and really, the jackalopes weren't the biggest danger he'd faced. Their horns and teeth might be sharp, but they had nothing on the calculated malice of Granny Whitney or the hatred of Mike. Honestly, he realized that it was because he was going with Emily. She was always so laser-focused on everything. When they were both focused on a problem or in the tournament, he felt like they got along well. Once things were more casual, though, he found his thoughts going in other directions. Even thinking about how attractive she was felt wrong, though, like it might bring her glare down on him. It was probably stupid. She was several years older than him, and she had her life way more in order. He'd never seen her Lucrema portfolio, but knew that she was worth far more than he was. Maybe it was best to just put those thoughts out of mind
and be glad that she was willing to hang out with him at all. Though he didn't feel like eating, Rick made himself eat a full lunch because he knew he'd need energy for the day. After that, he sat around awkwardly until he decided to just do his meditation cycle again. That managed to last him until he heard a car horn from outside. 1 o'clock exactly. Rick didn't doubt who it was for a second, just grabbed his things and headed out the door. Though he hadn't expected Emily to drive a pink sports car or anything, he definitely hadn't expected the little compact car waiting in the parking lot. He hopped over the edge and examined it as he got closer, looking for some kind of special modifications. Nope, it seemed like a normal Lucrum car.
Get in.
Emily leaned over to push the door open and jerked her head at him.
I assume you're ready to go.
Yeah. Rick ducked inside, glad that the ceiling was high enough that he didn't have to crouch. He wasn't sure exactly what to say, but Emily wasn't staring at him anymore, instead looking forward. She tapped the ignition, and the car immediately hummed to life. It stayed on the ground until they got out into the street, then lifted into the air. Not far, but enough to be in the conventional flying lane. As they accelerated north, he was surprised at the speed. This is going to be a lot faster than usual. Is this car something special?
More like the right mundane balance, Emily said. It's cheap, but decent quality. Gets excellent Lucrum mileage. Easy to get repaired. It's a good choice if you don't care much about cars. Plus, I have an acquaintance who owns a dealership and gave me a good price.
An acquaintance? He thought that was the first time Emily had ever spoken about a relationship, but she just had her hands on the steering wheel, looking forward. Maybe that was just her resting expression, or maybe she was a bit hostile. It was hard to tell. Rick settled for a safe response. I'm using a bike these days, trying to train my aura endurance.
Oh, yeah?
Emily did glance over at him at that, potential hostility changing to interest.
I have a coworker who's a really obsessive biker and won't shut up about the Lucrum benefits.
Well, I don't know enough to never shut up about it, so don't worry about that.
I think he's probably right. I just don't feel like I have the time for it. We already work long hours, and when you add training and normal stuff on top of it, it's just a lot. I don't want to take on a time-consuming hobby.
I know the feeling. Rick stared out the window on his side, starting to feel a bit less tense. It's a bit difficult to keep up with everything I need to do, so I'm really grateful you agreed to come along. This would be dangerous without you. To his surprise, Emily didn't answer at first. Were her fingers tight on the steering wheel? But after a moment, she glanced in his direction and gave a quick smile.
I'm happy to help, and I don't even consider it doing you a favor. There aren't that many chances to experience life-and-death situations in the modern world, so this could be interesting.
Well, I hope we won't be risking death, but those little things definitely go for the throat. That made Rick think about the encounter with the hitman and Emily's hidden technique that she worked so hard to keep secret. He wondered about why exactly she was training for real combat, yet felt certain that asking would be a mistake. Instead, he told her about meeting Blue the Bear, a name he only then realized sounded a bit silly. Emily seemed to find the story interesting, though, and that led the conversation in an easy direction. They chatted about various things until they eventually got close to their destination. Once they went off-road, a task made easy by the flying vehicle, Rick had to pay more attention and direct them toward the hills. When he eventually spotted the location, they landed at a safe distance. Once he was out, Emily retracted the entire Lucrum vehicle into her car keys and hopped to her feet in the same motion, not even opening her door. Nice trick.
Okay, do we have a game plan?
When Emily looked to him, Rick blinked in surprise. Somehow, he'd expected her to take the lead, but he supposed that it was his job. Literally, his job. Fortunately, he'd been thinking about the problems. Last time, the jackalopes attacked when we got close. I was thinking we should start by doing the same to let us get used to their attacks.
Makes sense. But the region where the Lucrum anomaly might be is too big to draw them all out, right?
Yeah, probably. I considered going around the edges to draw as many as possible, but I'm not sure if that would be worth our time. We're gonna need to head in eventually and feel our way to the anomaly.
Seems reasonable. Let's go.
Emily followed close behind him as they approached the hills, her hands tucked in the pockets of her hoodie. Once they got close, however, she pulled down her hood and kept her hands loose at her sides. He saw no hint of her aura blade, but sensed that she was ready to use it at a moment's notice.
They walked near the edge of the grasses before Rick stopped them. His eyes tracked over the hills, looking for some sign of jackalopes. For a moment, he thought he saw a rustle in the grass, but it was simply the wind blowing in an odd pattern. As the silence stretched on, Rick awkwardly glanced over to Emily. This was actually just a pretense to get you to try my multi-level marketing program.
Relax, Rick. I know they won't necessarily appear immediately.
They did last time. Rick stepped back and scratched his neck. We could enter, I'm just
Heads up!
He jerked his attention back to the ground just in time to see a brown blur rushing toward him. Before he could react, Emily intercepted it with an aura blade. Two halves of the jackalope tumbled to the ground, and its blood splattered over Rick's body. There was no time to get distracted because there were at least two more emerging from the grass. By chance, or more intelligence than he expected from rabbits, they were closing on Emily in a pincer movement. He assumed that she could take the one on her right, since that was her sword hand, and rushed in to attack the other as it jumped. His fist easily struck the side of the jackalope, and he felt a fatal crunch as it fell away. As expected, Emily had skewered the other one running at her. Yet in the moment his attention was drawn away, yet another leapt from the grass, again for his throat. Rick tried to punch it head on, yet to his surprise, the jackalope lowered its head. One of the tines grazed his hand, opening a painful gash. He pushed through the pain and slammed his elbow into the side of the creature's head before it could reach him. That one went flying as well, but it hadn't even hit the ground when he saw the grasses shake violently and a number of jackalopes rush at him. There was no time to count, he just had to strategize and act instantly. Part of him wanted to bunion step away, but he wasn't sure of Emily's position and didn't want to leave her back undefended if she had her own problems. So instead, he took them head on. Two of the jackalopes leapt at him, heads lowered, but this time he wasn't stupid enough to punch into their horns. Instead, he just kept his hands open and grabbed the horns out of the air. A third had somehow gotten on his flank and leapt straight at his head, but he barely managed to use the jackalope in his right hand as a melee weapon, smacking it out of the air. Too late, he realized that he didn't have them all accounted for. There was yet another rushing in low, aiming to spear his leg. He tried to kick at it, yet it dodged to the side with surprising agility. Rick immediately tried to line up another attack, but at that moment, the jackalope in his left hand managed to twist enough to bite him. The bite didn't draw blood, but it hurt enough to distract him for the critical second. Just before the jackalope impaled his leg, Emily swept in from the side, cutting it in half. Her other hand came up as well, surrounded in a second aura blade. In a brutal sweep, she cut apart the ones in his hands, leaving him even more blood spattered. He nodded to her and dropped the remains, keeping his guard up, but it was almost over. There was one more jackalope attacking, having gotten around behind them, but Emily cut it down effortlessly. Meanwhile, he found one that was still injured and stomped it. "Thanks for saving me back there." He leaned forward on his knees for a bit, though that made his hand twinge, so he had to start bandaging it instead.
"Don't worry about it. That's just how this will go."
Emily tucked her hair back behind her ear as she usually wore it. Her gaze on him was a bit odd, matched with an expression he couldn't interpret.
Sorry for getting you so bloody.
"Oh, that's right." Rick had been too focused on the fight to think about it, but he had a lot of jackalope blood covering him. He wiped some of the nastier parts off, but it was mostly a futile effort. "Sorry, but I'm sure I'm going to be even bloodier by the end. Hopefully not with my own blood."
"Nah, you're rocking the look."
He had no idea if the slight smile on her face was mocking him or not. Once his hand was bound, Rick took a timeout to gather himself. His defensive core wasn't in bad shape, it just wasn't strong enough to stop the piercing horns. Still, he was sure he could improve it over time, and even now he had a few simple ideas. After he did that, he looked over the bloody field and shook his head at the jackalope bodies.
"You said you wanted to collect these?"
Emily had her arms folded, looking over the scene as well.
"Did they give you some kind of artifact to absorb their lucrum?"
No. I had in mind something a lot more mundane. Rick tugged off his backpack and pulled out his secret weapon, a bundle of black garbage bags and some canvas. "It's going to be nasty, but..." Just rolling her eyes, Emily helped him pick up the bodies and dump them into the sack. She held them carefully with two fingers, getting blood on herself for the first time. Somehow she'd gotten through the previous fight completely untouched. She didn't complain, though. It was unpleasant work, so Rick distracted himself by thinking that this must be what game characters would actually be like without magical inventories. He hoped that the corpses would ward off other jackalopes, but he had a feeling that they would throw themselves into a homicidal rage no matter what. This was one form of wildlife he had absolutely zero sympathy for. When they were done, he stood up and wiped his hands off on his shirt, since it was going to be ruined anyway. Okay, I need to do the surveying technique, then we can advance further in.
I'll stand guard until then.
Emily put herself in between him and the tall grass, but kept glancing back. He realized that she was considering the surveying technique that she'd helped enhance, but decided to focus on doing it quickly for now. They could talk once they were safe. They advanced inward carefully, getting out of the tall grass as soon as they reached an incline. Several more jackalopes tried to attack them by leaping from a nearby mound, but Emily noticed them early. With forewarning, they easily took the creatures out before they could take any further injuries. Unfortunately, when he repeated the survey technique on top of the hill, it suggested that they needed to head deeper into a tangled area. When given the news, Emily just nodded and they advanced inward. For a while, there was only the sound of the wind and their legs passing through the tall grass. Rick realized that he shouldn't have been surprised. Realistically, there couldn't be enough jackalopes to attack them every few steps or they'd have overrun the entire region. Still, he found his tension increasing the further they went without any attack. The jackalopes didn't seem to have anything more than animal intelligence, but he didn't want to underestimate how smart animals could be. I think we're getting closer. Rick checked the aura between his hands again, debating whether or not it would be safe to walk with it constantly instead of just checking from time to time. That way, I think.
Can you just keep that on and home in on the anomaly?
I was just debating that, actually. Emily shrugged.
Go ahead, I can cover you.
Trusting that she could back up her words, Rick did as she asked. That did allow them to target the anomaly more quickly, especially since he came to realize that the Lucrim flow warped strangely within the hills. Twice, they were attacked by a single jackalope that Emily effortlessly cut apart and then dumped into one of the garbage bags. She had a frown on her face that was increasing, distracting Rick from his work. Afraid that she might be getting bored, he decided to speak up.
Do you think it would be possible to kill one without damaging it?
My sister joked about stuffing one, and it might be funny to actually do it.
Possibly. If they attack in isolation, it shouldn't be too difficult.
Emily kept frowning, however. Not long after, another jackalope leapt at them. This time, Emily dissipated one of her aura blades, instead catching the jackalope by its horn with surprising grace. She swung it around several times, disorienting it, then stabbed it. Not with her full aura blade, but with a single finger extended, a needle-thin spike of aura going into the creature's head. It went limp without any visible sign of injury. That was damn impressive. Rick glanced toward Emily, but she was frowning more severely than before.
Is everything okay?
Without warning, she dropped to one knee and let out a hiss.
Shit, they're smart enough to ambush. Get ready.
Around them, the grass began to tremble. Chapter 23. Making a Change. Rick stared at Emily after her announcement, then his eyes rushed to look over the movement in the hills and bushes around them.
You mean they're all around us?
And I think they closed off our retreat,
she said, her mouth set in a grim line.
If they stay still long enough, I can cut out...
But that wasn't to be, because before they could execute the plan, the grasses and bushes began rustling more violently on all sides. Several jackalopes launched themselves like furry missiles, and Rick ducked one, using his elbow to deflect another. There were more coming, several through the grass, but this time he was prepared for a low attack. Rick began a series of rapid-fire kicks that sent most of the jackalopes tumbling backward, but one got through and cut along his ankle. A second later, a jackalope split in half a foot from his head, showering him with blood. He hadn't even noticed the beast before Emily cut it in half.
We can't fight like this, she said. Cover me.
Though Rick had no idea what she meant, there was no time to argue. Emily raised one arm in front of her face, focusing, and there were jackalopes closing in from all sides. Just trying to fight them off with his fists was useless, but Rick realized that he had another weapon. Bracing his defensive core, Rick used a bunion step to throw himself at a rushing group of jackalopes. Since he hit them before they could lower their horns, they went flying. Some of their antlers stabbed him a bit, but nothing like a direct attack. Grinning, Rick began bouncing around Emily in a series of rapid bunion steps. He was taking trivial injuries and exhausting himself, but each movement sent more jackalopes flying. If he moved around her in a star pattern, he could effectively keep them all off. They began to bunch up strangely, forcing him to shift his pattern. Just when he started to wonder how long he needed to keep it up, Emily spoke.
"Stay there."
He froze, and at that moment, Emily struck. She swung her hand through the air, the aura around her hand extending to a massive distance. It sliced straight through a large region, tearing apart grass, jackalopes, and rocks with equal ease. Though she took out several of the animals, Rick realized her true objective. She'd completely cleared a large area of grasses and other places for the jackalopes to hide. He managed one more bunion step to get him into the open space, and Emily followed him a second later.
"Great idea, Emily. We need to finish this fight first."
For all her terse response, he saw a smile on her face. From their new position, the two of them fought off the herd of beasts. Rick could feel that he was bleeding from the minor injuries, and occasionally a charging jackalope managed to score another slice, but he'd realized that those couldn't take him down. If he focused on defending his face, his fists, and his joints, he'd be fine. Emily took a few injuries as well in the swarm, but she wasn't seriously threatened. As they fought together, their teamwork began to improve. He developed a sense for her position and didn't move unnecessarily when she could defend herself. Meanwhile, she eased off on rushing in to protect him from flank attacks, trusting in his defenses. Rick felt the enormous difference in power between them, yet Emily didn't emphasize it. She trusted him to carry his weight and didn't make him feel like a burden. He remembered just how prickly she'd been when they'd first met. It had been justified due to the circumstances, but she'd warmed a bit since then. Obviously, she was never going to be the emotional type, but now that she trusted him, she was a reliable ally. It went on long enough that Rick began to expect the animals to merge together into a giant boss jackalope. But nothing ridiculous happened. The beasts just thinned until the last threw themselves homicidally into his shoe and Emily's sword. They shifted back to back, pivoting carefully to examine the battlefield, but it seemed that it was over.
Phew!
Rick let out his breath in one burst, and his tension went with it. He wanted to slump to his knees, but his knees hurt. When he looked over himself, he realized just how many injuries he'd taken. They were almost all superficial, and they hadn't impeded him significantly, but damn, they hurt like hell now that the adrenaline was wearing off.
Wow, I am a mess.
Damn it, these things cut my hoodie.
Emily examined it in dissatisfaction.
I really figured its inbuilt defenses would hold, but their ability to use Lucrim offensively is surprising.
Yeah, but I think we had to have killed most of them.
Rick was still panting for breath, so he took a while just to breathe deeply. Once he felt better, he began picking up all the corpses and dropping them into a garbage bag. He felt slightly relieved that Emily needed to catch her breath too after that experience. After poking her fingers through the holes in her hoodie, she sighed and pulled it off to tie around her waist. Underneath, she was wearing a t-shirt. It was a perfectly normal one, but with her chest rising and falling like that, Rick decided it was a good time to check the survey technique again.
"We're pretty close," he announced, looking back up into the hills. "Hopefully we'll find the anomaly before we run into any more of them."
"No need to rush into it."
Emily reached into a pouch in her hoodie and came out with two thin cans. They looked like energy drinks, but the label said Ethcorp Bioenergetic Restorative in plain font, not exactly a catchy slogan.
"Drink one of these. Given your defensive core, it should help a lot."
"Thanks."
Rick took it, his fingers brushing against hers, and hastily drank it. The liquid tasted more like gasoline than anything, but an instant later he felt it shoot through his body like fire. He rubbed his forehead.
"Wow, that's quite a kick."
"Yeah. It will make you feel a lot better in the short term, but it will also help you recover faster.
Emily had already finished her can and tucked it away in one pocket. She gave him a surprisingly broad smile, then gestured with her head into the hills.
All right, you ready to finish this?
They advanced forward in more cautious silence after the previous ambush, but no attacks materialized. Rick decided that since Emily had normal combat covered, the best thing he could do was focus on the survey technique so they could finish sooner. The anomaly really had to be close, maybe tucked just around any one of these corners. I think it must be just ahead. Rick looked up from time to time, then went back to frowning at the aura between his hands. Hopefully soon.
Rick.
Something in Emily's voice made him look up, and he immediately froze. A dragon wound its way from around a rock, this one larger and less pathetic than the previous beast, though still woefully undergrown overall. It had a few broken antlers sticking out of its hide, as if it had fought off local jackalopes. All of that was less important than the foam around its jaws. The dragon had rabies. Before they could react, it let out a keening cry and charged, shockingly fast. They'd both been frozen at the sight and had to force themselves to react. It was all Rick could do to dodge aside with a bunion step, knowing he couldn't contract a potentially lucrum-enhanced infection. Emily dodged and struck back, but her aura blade glanced off its scales, only landing a shallow blow. There was almost no time to think. The dragon caught itself on an opposite mound, its body coiling as it prepared another rabid rush. Rick wasn't sure how to react, but in the moment they had, Emily called out,
"You block, I strike!"
Almost before his mind had consciously understood, Rick found himself moving in reaction. When the dragon rushed at them again, he threw himself out to meet it. The jaws came for his face with terrible speed, but Rick managed to hit it in the side of the head with one elbow. His blow barely stunned the rabid dragon, which lunged out at him again. This time its teeth threatened his strike, so all he could do was grab it around the long neck. Yet the creature was surprisingly strong, twisting and trying to snap at him. Any moment, it would get the right angle, and those teeth would sink into his... The dragon's head spun through the air as Emily completed her swing. For a while, they just stared at the creature. Then Rick let out a low laugh. The poor creature was tragic, yet it was a laugh of pure joy that they'd survived. Thankfully, Emily joined him, dissipating her aura blade and wiping her eyes as she laughed.
I can't believe we killed it like that.
Rick had to suck in a deep breath.
I know.
Emily partially doubled over, gripping his shoulder so as not to fall down, and he didn't even mind the slight pain.
Immediately after, I started kicking myself, because I kept thinking that what I'd yelled was stupid, yet you figured it out.
Guess we're in sync after slaughtering so many defenseless rabbits.
It was a dumb joke, but it got a giggle from Emily. For a moment, they were both bending over, getting their laughter under control, their faces nearly touching. Emily stared into his eyes with an expression he couldn't read, and when she spoke, her voice was oddly breathy.
Rick?
She didn't continue, and he stared back, becoming increasingly awkward. Before he could think of anything to say, she pulled away.
Let's finish the job first. There could be more of them.
So the moment had passed. Rick swallowed his disappointment, though he wasn't sure exactly why. They took care of the dragon's body as respectfully as they could, burying it instead of putting it in a garbage bag. After that, they advanced toward the anomaly. It ended rather anticlimactically, with a few weak jackalope attacks and one more attempted ambush, but it was a much smaller number of the animals, and their teamwork had improved, so the murderous creatures never had a chance. Then, without anything else to defend it, they stumbled across the anomaly. Emily stood guard in case more jackalopes came to attack them, but nothing stopped Rick from getting out his sphere and reporting the anomaly. It was accepted almost immediately, and though he breathed a sigh of relief, he found himself a bit disappointed. As they walked back out of the hilly area, collecting a few missed jackalope bodies along the way, Rick found himself wondering if he'd made a mistake. Going in alone would probably have been suicide, and he thought calling Emily had been the right choice, but something wasn't quite right. The conversation that had come much easier before now seemed suppressed as if by an aura. When they got back into Emily's car, she gripped the wheel tightly and drove well over the speed limit as if rushing home. Rick risked a glance over at her and wondered what was wrong. She did seem to pull back when people got too close for her, so had that been the problem after the big fight? They finally got back, and he was starting to feel like he should just run away. Yet it wouldn't be right to just leave her after she'd done so much to help him. So, as he got out of the car, he swallowed his uncomfortableness and spoke.
"Thanks a lot for helping today, Emily. And if I screwed up...
Rick, do you want to get dinner sometime?"
Without warning, she was staring at him, her gaze intent, but no longer so unfriendly. He froze in shock, staring back at her. All at once, he reinterpreted how tightly her fingers gripped the steering wheel. The way the words had tumbled out of her mouth, she was as nervous as he was. Rick found his emotions spinning rapidly because he didn't want to stand there like an idiot, but he needed to make the right decision. Emily was a great friend, and he wasn't about to deny the attraction he felt, yet she'd seemed to hold herself at such a distance. She turned away.
"Okay, forget it.
Wait, yes."
Rick took a deep breath as he made his decision and smiled at her.
"Yes, I'd love to get dinner sometime. And I don't mean dinner to talk about Lucrum techs at the place by your work, though we can definitely do that if you want."
Emily's glare melted into a relieved smile.
"Oh, thank fuck. It's hard for me to put myself out there, and I was beginning to think I'd blown it."
No, you're fine. If you were throwing hints earlier, I can be pretty boneheaded about this sort of thing. Sorry if I missed..."
She snorted.
"I'm not going to go on about feminine intuition, Rick. I'm an engineer. I like things to be straightforward and simple."
Well.
The fact that they were technically sort of dating hit him in a rush, and he tried to work with it, keeping his face in a smile that wasn't too ridiculous.
"If we're being straightforward, all that fighting left me with no idea what my schedule is. But I do really want to get dinner, so let's text and set a time."
"Right, good. And no bullshit about waiting 3 days or anything."
As Emily smiled back at him, Rick realized that he didn't regret his decision in the slightest. After that, he collected several garbage bags of animal carcasses out of the back of her car. This was significantly less romantic. But grinning like an idiot the way he was, Rick didn't really care.
Chapter 24. The Peakless Lodge. Between his injuries and his newly existent dating life, Rick didn't rush to return to the Peakless Wildlife Refuge. A night of rest certainly did him a lot of good, but the next morning the smell of all the jackalope bodies reminded him that there was no way he could ignore them any longer. They completely filled his old fridge. For once, it was a helpful thing that he and Melissa didn't have much food on hand. Rick got up and stretched, only then realizing that he wasn't terribly injured. He had healing scars from all the antler cuts, but they'd closed remarkably well. Presumably, that was what Emily had meant about the drink she'd given him, working with his defensive corps. Thoughts of that kept him positive, even as he got ready for an unpleasant task. He discovered that Melissa had already left for work and wondered about how many shifts she was taking. For now, the relevant part was that she'd left a note on the fridge, implying that he'd taken a job as an assassin and was storing bodies there. Rick smiled and got to work. Thankfully, double bagging the bodies with the canvas had prevented them from ruining the fridge, so it was simply a task of lugging them out. After having spent so long biking everywhere, calling for a taxi felt like a ridiculous luxury. He almost missed the bike ride out, the chance to meditate and get his mind in order. Given the new change in his life and the texts he'd exchanged with Emily, he could have used time to think. Instead, he focused on work and summoned a taxi. The driver stopped, then took a long, hard look at his giant, suspicious bag of bags.
"What do you have there, man?"
"I went hunting."
Rick opened the door and shoved the bag in, giving a smile that he hoped didn't make him look like an axe murderer.
"I need to take all of that to the Peakless Wildlife Refuge."
"North of Branton? I can take you to the edge of the place, but you're not supposed to just wander in."
"Don't worry, I have an appointment. I can guide you through the last part."
As they drove, he held the bag awkwardly. For a while, he tried to resist looking at the scoreboard, assuming it didn't yet include his anomaly from the day before.
Eventually, he gave in and was pleasantly surprised. 1. Pan Zhou, 155 merits. 2. Redacted, 151 merits. 3. Kate Durham, 140 merits. 4. Elliot Rutherford III, 137 merits. 5. Damien, 131 merits. 6. Heidi Cunningham, 124 merits. 7. Oswald, 122 merits. 8. Jack Ganas, 119 merits. 9. Matchk Baron, 113 merits. 10. Skin Master Zero, 105 merits. 10. Skin Master Zero, 105 merits. 11. Rick Hunter, 102 merits. 12. Javiera Banks, 86 merits. He was close enough to the top 10 that the display was repetitive. Though the competitors in the lead were still far ahead, he could actually feel himself catching up to many of the others. But there was no more time to look at the list because they were almost there. In the end, the taxi driver refused to go on the smaller roads. Rick winced when paying him, even though the amount wasn't actually that much compared to his paycheck. Plus, those merits would translate into actual money soon enough. Rick lugged the bag the last part of the way to the office, feeling like a murderous Santa Claus. There was no Delson waiting for him this time, so he'd actually get to go inside. He was curious about some of the displays, but decided to look at them more once he wasn't carrying so many animal corpses. Indoors, he found a pleasant, if rustic, waiting area and a wooden desk with no one present. Further inside, he saw a few offices with the lights on, but glancing in, he found no one. Rick didn't want to intrude, so instead he moved the other way into a large side room. His first thought was that it was a dog pound before he realized that was too mundane of a term. There were cages along the walls, yes, but they didn't contain mutts from the streets. The first was empty, but the second contained a dragon similar to the ones he'd seen, though it looked in much better health. It hissed and coiled back into a corner when it saw him, though, so he moved on. The next occupied cage contained what he first thought was a white fox. Then he reconsidered. It looked up at him, eyes as luminous as the moon, and Rick's eyebrows rose. Not quite thinking about it, he knelt down next to the cage, maintaining eye contact. Was that a kitsune? That didn't make any sense, because he didn't think they were even close to native to North America. Dragons might be natural everywhere, but kitsunes shouldn't be if he remembered his classes. It seemed a shame for it to be locked up. Rick realized what was happening a second later and shook himself. The pale fox was beautiful, but it needed to be kept where it was until the experts could take it somewhere it belonged.
Oh, good.
A young man's voice came from the side, and Rick jumped as if he'd been caught doing something wrong.
I thought I might have to snap you out of it.
Standing and hefting his bag, Rick turned to find who had spoken. It was a young man who immediately struck him as family to Delson, though he wore skinny jeans and a t-shirt with a character that looked vaguely familiar, maybe from a game Rick had never been able to afford. Realizing he was staring, Rick took a hand off the bag and offered it to shake. Hi, I'm Rick. There wasn't anybody here when I came in.
Yeah, we don't get many visitors.
The man shook his hand and then glanced behind him.
Your, delivery is leaking.
Really? Rick looked back and cursed under his breath when he saw that some of the blood that had yet to congeal was leaking out of the bottom point. Just recently, since it hadn't made too much of a mess of the floor, but not what he'd wanted. Was the jackalope blood acidic or something?
If that's an animal you wanted us to take care of, I think it's a bit beyond help.
For a moment, Rick stared at the unsmiling man, then he smiled despite himself. If this guy really was related to Delson, a dry sense of humor wasn't a surprise. I killed a lot of jackalopes. I didn't exactly have a scheduled appointment, but Delson should have told you that I was coming.
Oh, you're the one that Uncle Delson mentioned.
The man looked him over, then gave an easy smile.
I'm Wimalot. Please don't shorten that to anything. We actually do pay a small amount for exterminating Lucrum using pests, though not a lot. Here, come this way.
Wimalot headed out into the main room, and when Rick followed, he was surprised to see a young woman emerging from the offices, wiping something dark blue off her hands on a rag. The family resemblance was, again, obvious. When she blinked at them curiously, Wimalot gestured between them.
Atsala, this is Rick, the one Uncle mentioned. Rick, this is my sister.
Do the two of you run this place? His question sounded stupid to him even a moment later, but Atsala gave him a friendly smile and replied.
Our parents own it and handle all the business and permits and stuff, but they do leave a lot of the day-to-day work to us.
Bring all your corpses over here.
Wemelot moved to an empty corner and spread out a plastic tarp. As Rick began to unload the bodies, he shook his head.
Poor things. I tried to domesticate some jackalopes when I was young. Nearly lost a finger.
Because you're a dumbass.
Wemelot scowled at his sister.
It wasn't absurd. Humanity has domesticated many of its greatest enemies.
Those freaks aren't animals.
Atsala glanced at Rick and rolled her eyes at her brother.
Wemmy here.
Don't call me that.
Wemmy has a huge bleeding heart for animals. I'm more interested in what can be done with these bodies, but that will come after.
I'm so glad the refuge isn't going to pass to you.
Wemelot frowned at his sister while he tallied up all the bodies. Then the frown fell away and he smiled at Rick.
This is pretty impressive. We'll pay you 450 lucrum for exterminating the lot.
Plus some of what we get out of it, because Uncle Delson said we should treat you fairly.
After looking back and forth between them, trying to figure out if they actually disliked each other, Rick wasn't quite prepared to make a decision. The strange thing was, he didn't find the lucrum all that appealing. Once a bonus like that would have been a big deal, yet compared to his needs now, it didn't register that much. Now that he thought about it. You can keep the money. Let Delson owe me a favor.
Oh, he's not going to like that.
Atsala grinned and Wemelot scowled, but they seemed to accept his decision.
Okay, Wemmy, help me move these things over for processing.
That turned out to mean getting a bin marked with a lucrum hazard sign and dumping all the bodies into it. As Rick helped, he looked over the siblings a bit more carefully. Wemelot had a generation rate of about 38,000 lucrum, while Atsala's was about 32,000 lucrum. But her lucrumasol felt more polished. Maybe that had something to do with her work. Physically, they were cut from very similar cloth as their uncle, though Atsala wore nice clothes.